Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, even though the Iowa caucuses are 6 months away, things are going on. Organizers and volunteers are very busy. Most of this hour, we'll be looking at the work and the people that make the caucuses happen. Joining us to do that, Rachel Payne Caulfield, professor of political science at Drake University in our Des Moines studio. Rachel, hi. Rachel, are you there?
Hello.
Ah, we got you now.
There I am.
Hope you can hear me as well.
I can.
Okay, wonderful that you could come into our studio. Chris Larimer of the UNI will be joining us in just a few minutes. Before we get into the sort of the main topic of this hour, Rachel, I wanted to ask you about the Democratic debates. In the last 2 nights, we had 20 candidates there on the stage in those 2 nights of debates. What are your takeaways? What moved here?
Well, they were two very different nights.
Yes, they were, weren't they?
The tone and tenor of the conversation was very different, and the makeup of the candidates on stage really mattered. And for those of us in Iowa, I always loved news reports about debates where they use some snippets and then they, tell us who said what. And for those of us in Iowa, we've been hearing these candidate voices for several months now. So it's always interesting to know that the national audience is just barely beginning to tune in to what we've been doing out here. I think, on the first night, obviously, you had this big, bold, progressive vision, and you saw this on full display, right? This divide within the Democratic Party right now about how far left to go on some of these policy proposals. And then exactly the opposite kind of happened last night. You saw very few candidates put forward any big comprehensive vision. It was a lot of back and forth on policy details, a lot of attacking Joe Biden, but you didn't get a sense of a big comprehensive theory of how government works or how the Democrats seek to move forward in policy. Mm-hmm. So two very different nights. I think we got a real idea about the candidates and how much that mix of candidates matters.
Mm-hmm. Do you expect these debates, this round of debates, to have an impact on the candidates' polls or fundraising for the candidates?
Sure, yeah. So at this early stage, for most Americans, this is the first they're seeing of this field of candidates. And so the debates have a big influence in how they're evaluating not just their policy proposals, but who they are as people and how they present themselves. Mm-hmm. And we know that the next round of debates requires this increasing level of support. There are a lot of candidates who are on the stage this week who will not be on the stage in September. So each of those candidates, it's one of the reasons I think last night got so heated in a few points and you saw really pointed attacks. Some of these candidates, this is where they have to make their stand. They have to break through. And if they don't break through, then the chances of continuing to be on the debate stage in front of a national audience are pretty slim.
Right.
I'm not sure we saw any of those breakout moments. But, for example, Tulsi Gabbard, we saw her really go for it, right?
Right. She went after Kamala Harris in a big way. You could see her attempt at breaking through. And
you saw Jay Inslee, for example,
right?
Really go after Joe Biden and the other candidates on climate change and push his candidacy based on climate change.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned it. I would elaborate on this because, of course, these types of debates, a debate with 10 people on stage, there's a lot of criticism. What is this about anyway? Can you really go in depth on policy? No. Can you mention policy? Sure. But I wonder what you think this is a measure of. What sort of tool are these debates, and is it a good tool?
Well, I'm not sure that it's a good tool. We have to kind of wait and see how all this shakes out in the Democratic Party this cycle. But you saw this with the Republicans in 2016, and I think there are a couple things to keep in mind. The first is that who's on stage depends on early fundraising and poll numbers. And so it really takes away the element of candidates gradually gaining support, right? That mythology of Jimmy Carter coming to Iowa and building momentum by knocking on doors, right? candidates can't afford to do that anymore. I mean, they have to really, as soon as they're out of the gate, they need to be ready to run. And that requires a lot of fundraising in advance. It requires name recognition. It requires high polling numbers, or relatively high polling numbers, early on. So it changes the nature of the campaign process, and it's going to change the kinds of candidates who can be successful in the process. And then the debate stage itself, I think, as much as anything, this really is a game of first impressions. And it's one of the reasons why you see candidates come out and they really try to get that soundbite across or get that perfect attack line across,
right,
because they need to define themselves very, very quickly in order to stay in the race.
Right. And don't they need to define themselves against a sort of a person who isn't on stage? I mean, aren't all Democrats saying, how would Joe Biden face Donald Trump? How would Kamala Harris? How would Tulsi Gabbard? Can they stand toe-to-toe with this slugger?
Yeah, there's always a... So, you know, in any debate, obviously, there's kind of an unseen, in any primary debate, there's kind of an unseen opponent, right, in the general election. In this case, we know exactly who that unseen opponent is, but we also know that there are 10 other Democratic opponents who are not on that stage. It makes it even more complicated, you know, even here in Iowa, where we've been exposed to so many of these people for a good long time now. You know, if you bring up somebody's name, people kind of look at you and say, who?
Who is
it? Who is that?
Yeah, like, two dozen is a lot of names to remember.
They're running for president,
yeah,
too.
Okay. Other debates to analyze for now. We'll put that to the side, Rachel Caulfield, and invite Chris Larimer into our discussion. Chris is a professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa in our Cedar Falls studio. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Ben. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Chris.
Let's get into talking about the Iowa caucuses, how they work. We were reaching out this hour also to hear from you. If you're a caucus volunteer, share your experience. We'll be talking about that a lot here this half hour. We'll be hearing a little later from a Democratic and a Republican caucus organizer, 1-866-780-9100. Do you volunteer? Have you in years past? We'd like to have you part of our conversation. Of course, the Iowa caucuses for decades have represented a famously important and influential bellwether for the primary season. We want to look now in the next few minutes at the role Iowans play at the grassroots level in the lead up to caucus day and caucus day itself. What's happening now, 6 months out, with the campaigns on the ground here in Iowa? Who is doing the work? What is the structure of the campaigns? What preparations are going on for that big day 6 months from now, February 3rd? We want to get an idea of the role of non-staff Iowans, these volunteers in campaigns and the caucus system. Start us off, would you, Chris? What are the campaigns? What's going on now in terms of preparation for the caucuses?
Well, I think right now a lot of it is organizing within the campaign, you know, setting up offices. But there's also a lot of mobilization going on, too, in terms of trying to find supporters. So you think about the organization part of this. Campaigns are trying to open as many offices as they can around the state, trying to identify key supporters throughout the state. And they're, really, there's a systematic process to do that, right? You start essentially at the county level. We have 99 counties. The candidates are working with the central committee within each one of those counties, trying to identify key supporters, trying to identify key individuals who will be helpful as we get closer to that February 3rd date. And then beyond that, beyond the organizational aspect to it, there's just the mobilization part of it in terms of finding supporters who will work for the campaign, finding dedicated supporters, and most importantly, finding Iowans who are willing to be a dedicated supporter for that campaign. You know, you can always bring in outside staff, but I think there's a potential for backlash there. I think it for most campaigns, they're looking to identify key Iowans who can be helpful for their campaign. And there's some research to support this, right? I mean, if you think about just how do we mobilize people to get them to the polls, the best way to do that is just door-to-door, going canvassing door-to-door, door-knocking, right? We know that that's the most effective voter mobilization method. Well, who do you want showing up at that door? You would, in an ideal world as a campaign, you would want someone from the neighborhood who is knocking on one of their neighbor's doors saying, I support this candidate. And so campaigns are looking to, they're trying to get as close to that point as they can right now. And so that means, again, you know, looking within each community, finding Iowans who will be helpful throughout the process, and starting at the county level with the central committee and then working their way down.
Mm-hmm. Rachel, add to that in terms of the preparation here. I think it's an interesting point, whether you have a national staff, these are the paid staff coming in, or whether you you have Iowans in this setting.
Yeah, and you really want a mix of both of those, as Chris pointed out. So you can bring in all the professional staff in the world who know how to, you know, craft a good campaign commercial and what have you. But in Iowa, the name of the game is field. It's going out and knocking on doors, as Chris said. This is the key to the Iowa caucuses. And I guess I would add as well, in so many states, and particularly states that have primaries and aggregate votes at the state level, right, which is kind of the typical way to do this, a candidate could come to the state capital, right, the most populous city in the state. They could come to Des Moines and rack up a lot of votes and call it a day. Mm-hmm. And say, you know, I have shallow support among a wide range of people, and I feel pretty good about my chances. But the way Iowa organizes its caucuses at the neighborhood level, it means that a well-organized campaign, a campaign with a really sophisticated ground game in Iowa, they're going to have people in every corner of the state. They're going to have people who can go to their local caucuses, who will stand up in their local caucuses and speak on behalf of the campaign, who will then know enough about the process to potentially engage in this weird realignment period, right? Like, this is a deep commitment by voters. It's not enough to say, yeah, I like that candidate, right? You have to be motivated, and you have to be well-connected to the campaign. The campaign has to trust that those activists on caucus night are going to go into their caucus and are going to make a persuasive case. And that's putting a lot of responsibility onto the voter, the average everyday Iowan, as a representative of the campaign. Those people are not paid. They're not staffers. And that's when those neighborhood connections, friends, families, trusted neighbors, you know, people who run into each other at the PTA meetings, what have you, those relationships matter a lot. So you're looking for that key group of activists, and they have to be spread across every corner of the state of Iowa.
Mm-hmm. So we've got these layers. We've got the top hierarchy in the state, the paid staffers, and then underneath this, the sort of structure that you've just described.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Who do these campaigns want on their team? Go a little bit more into that, the qualities that they're looking for in these grassroots volunteers and organizers. Chris?
Well, I mean, they're looking for, obviously, individuals who can be professional. They're looking for individuals who are comfortable talking about politics and talking about it in a way that's not confrontational. I think what Rachel was getting at, what I was trying to get at with the caucuses, is a lot of this is based on comfort, right? How comfortable are you as a candidate interacting with voters, but also how comfortable are voters interacting with other voters, particularly when you're talking about the Democratic caucuses, as Rachel said, where everything is public, where you go there on caucus night, you see who your neighbors like, they see who you like as a candidate.
Mm-hmm. It's not a secret ballot.
Right, it's not secret at all.
Well, for the Republicans it is, though, but for the Democrats not, right?
Right, yeah, that's exactly right. And so I think, you know, they're looking for individuals who are motivated, who are professional, and who are comfortable talking about politics with strangers, which is actually very difficult to do. I mean, you can imagine not walking up to a stranger's door and start talking about politics. Most people are turned off by politics or are not real excited about it. And so you have to find young staff, experienced staff. And I think, again, as Rachel said, you can have the folks from out of state who are running kind of the top level of the campaign. But at the grassroots level, you need those. It's probably best to have the local volunteers because these are people who are familiar with the community. They're familiar with the key actors in the community. And they're just familiar with Iowa generally, so they can talk casually not only about politics but about other things going on within the state. And so when you have, you know, for right now for the Democratic candidates where you have 20-plus candidates, it's a real scramble to try to find as many of those people who fit all those traits at this point in the campaign.
I'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Perhaps you have experience as a caucus volunteer. Share your experience, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Well, we have a new wrinkle. I don't know how much we know about this. Certainly reported months ago that the proposal by, I think, the Iowa Democratic Party, I'm not sure if they're working with the Republicans, but Of course, the Democrats are in the spotlight because of the great number of candidates they have vying for that nomination. This change of how the caucuses unfold, there will be virtual caucuses. I don't know, given our topic here of staffing and so forth, what do we know, Rachel, about how this will work?
We don't know much. We
right.
know that there will be some predetermined dates ahead of time and that voters will have the opportunity to sign up to participate in a virtual caucus, one of those virtual caucus meetings. But we don't know a lot yet about the means by which they will actually communicate. So is this going to be some sort of teleconference? Is it going to be a video? Is it like how are these people going to actually interact technologically? We're not quite sure yet. And we're not quite sure what the kind of what it means for organizing more generally. You know, I think it's possible that a savvy campaign could kind of unlock the key to a virtual caucus, but I don't think anybody knows what that is yet. They're trying to unlock the key to the in-person caucus, right? I mean, like so many of these staffers who come in from out of state and are trying to set up a caucus organization. I mean, I remember this from the 2008 Obama headquarters in the East Village. You would walk in and they had caucus math on the walls. They were trying to teach their staff about caucus math. And anybody who's going to actually be involved in a caucus, a Democratic caucus, needs to know caucus math. So, I mean, they're just trying to figure out the mechanics of the in-person caucus. A savvy campaign might be able to step in then and say, is there a way that this new virtual caucus can really advance our candidate? And I don't think anyone knows the answer to that yet.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what's driving this virtual caucus aspect here, Chris, is you know, some getting into the digital age, but also some criticism that the Iowa caucuses have had leveled at them for years, the low turnout. This is to what? Increase participation, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, if you look at turnout in past caucuses, you're typically talking about maybe a fourth of the active electorate within a party that actually participates in the caucus. Now, you can have unusual years like 2008 or even 2016 where that creeps up to 30 to 35% of active registered voters within a party participating in the caucuses, but that's still relatively low. And then when you start to think about just, you know, in terms of the voting eligible population in Iowa, I went back and looked, and in 2016 it was about 16% participate in the Iowa caucuses. And then you a week later you have the New Hampshire primary and it's over half the electorate participates in that.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
it doesn't make us look good.
No, it doesn't at all. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. They're trying to reach out. They're trying to expand the electorate. But I think Rachel makes a really good point here. It's going to be difficult to see what actually works because we know who shows up on caucus night. It's typically a more older voter who's done this before, who's used to it. And so now they're trying to target younger voters who may have never caucused before, and now you're adding this new wrinkle in terms of the virtual element to it that we don't know really much on at all at this point in terms of the rules, the structure, and how it's all going to play out.
Let's go to a caller, 1-866-780-9100. Chris Larimer and Rachel Caulfield are political scientists as we talk about sort of the underpinnings of the Iowa caucuses, the process, what's going on right now, 6 months ahead of caucus day. Jim in Dyersville is with us. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure thing. What's on your mind? Have you worked, volunteered on a campaign for the caucus?
No, I'm not an unusual Democrat, according to your experts here. I am a 64-year-old who's about to caucus for the first time in life. We're here since I'm 20 years old. I'm an registered independent, but I'm going to declare as a Democrat in January and caucus with the Democrats. The Republican Party has drifted so far away from anything that I can support personally. And in the terms, I sort of tested the waters. I did some, took the day off of work and drove some people to the poll and did a little poll work.
Jim, quickly to your point. Jim, quickly to your point, if you could. Your line is bad. You're breaking up a little bit. So, if you have a question, please get to it, and we'll have a response for you.
No, that was my only comment. I'll hang up. Thank you very much.
Jim in Dyersville, thank you very much. So, Jim, this is an this is something we haven't talked about. So people can what, Chris, register? They could be a Republican or they can be an independent the day before the caucuses, register as a Democrat and take part in the Democratic side, right?
That's absolutely right. That was a change that was put into place prior to the 2008 caucuses, where you can now have same-day registration. And you, and as you said, you do need to be a member, as a registered member of one of the two parties to participate in the caucuses. But yes, this is something he will be able to do in February if he changes his registration to being a member of the Democratic Party.
Okay, Clara is with us in West Branch. Coming up on a break, Clara, please, welcome to our program. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you. I've been doing this since 1972. My first candidate was Shirley Chisholm. And for a year, I listened to McGovern people tell me that their heart was with her, but she just was not electable. Well, then Election Day came, and McGovern carried one state. So one of the things I learned is that it was simply too early in the process to use electability as a standard. And in relation to paid organizers, what I see is mostly under 30s, college-educated, socially adept, issue-driven, hard-working people. And I'd say a lot of people are still what I call dancing for democracy. They haven't picked a candidate yet. The biggest yard sign in this part of the state is one that says, any functioning adult, 2020.
And I have seen that sign, yeah.
Which I think that pretty much says it. And at this point here, the organizers for the campaigns are Warren, Beto, Pete, and then the rest you'll get by phone calls. I've been doing this for so long that I have a list of people that I talk to regularly, and they're slowly beginning to pick a candidate. But the other thing is the Obama campaign in 2008 is the model, because he came into Iowa knowing that the demographics of the caucus goers at that point were not going to go for Obama. He had to change the demographics.
Okay.
And so in every county that I was aware of, he had a faith-based coordinator, a union coordinator, a youth coordinator.
Clara, we're running out of time. You've made some excellent points. I want a quick response. Chris, I know you have to go. Please respond. Clara had some excellent points there, didn't she, with all her experience?
Yeah, absolutely. And she's right. It has changed over the years. And she's also right that a lot of people do look at the Obama 2008 campaign as the model in terms of its preparation as well as its outreach to voters. We all know about the sophisticated algorithms it had in place to reach out to voters. But also, they took the very unusual task of trying to expand the caucus electorate, which is historically very, very difficult to do. But they were able to do it with very sophisticated methods in terms of not only using statistics and demographics, but also, you know, just using local canvassers in a way that was effective to reach as many people as possible.
Chris Larimer, thanks for joining us. I know you have to go. Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. We appreciate it, Chris.
Thank you, Ben. See you, Rachel.
Bye.
And Rachel, we're going to hang on to you, I hope, right?
Sure.
Okay, Rachel Caulfield, Professor of Political Science at Drake University, into our second half hour. Continue our discussion with Rachel about the nuts and bolts of how a caucus works, how the volunteers fit into the picture. We'll also hear in our next half hour from Democratic and Republican caucus organizers. That's when we return. We hope you'll join our conversation, especially if you've joined as a volunteer to work for a caucus. 1-866-780-9100. Ben Kiefer, back in just a moment.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. With 6 race events, including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
Glad to have you midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with Rachel Caulfield, Professor of Political Science at Drake University, also Director of the Iowa Caucus Project. We're looking at how the caucuses work, the work and the people that make the caucuses happen. What is happening now? It is 6 months, just 6 months before the Iowa caucuses on February 3rd. Who is doing the work now? What is the structure of the campaigns out there? What preparations are going on for that big day 6 months from now? We've been talking about that if you just joined us. And in just a moment, we'll be talking with the Democratic and Republican caucus organizers. But first, let's get a caller from our first half hour who waited. Thank you for waiting, Amanda in Clay County. You've been involved with a previous campaign cycle?
I was 2016 for the caucus process. I got heavily involved. I've caucused ever since I was old enough to vote. But it was just this last go round that I finally felt compelled to actually take a more active role and yeah, I knocked on doors and was pretty active in all of it.
When you knocked on doors, Amanda, I have to imagine a lot of people have, maybe you too, trepidation when you go up to those first few doors. I know you probably paired up with someone. It's a little bit of a transition to do that, isn't it?
It is. I'll tell you, I took, at first I made sure that it was safe and I kind of got my bearings, but then I took my kids with me. And when somebody knocks on your door and they have a really cute little two-year-old in their arms, it's a lot easier to have a conversation.
Right.
I felt things didn't get heated or anything like that. And it was usually a pleasant conversation. So they were actually my only buddies that I took along with me when we knocked. But
all right. Well, I suppose you could bring a cute puppy along with the same effect as well.
That would probably work. But yeah, it's go ahead.
No, what about this go round, Amanda? Are you active again as a volunteer?
I haven't been yet. I'm still kind of testing the waters and finding out. I know when I got involved last time, I was so heavily involved that it takes a lot out of you. And so I know that I'm going to get more active. However, I'm kind of I'm biding my time and getting a lot of time in with my kids before I do that, because when I go in, it's very it takes a lot of energy and it takes a lot of time. So,
and you're surveying a much larger candidate field than we had back when you worked for Bernie, right? So you're taking notice of the debates and so forth, I imagine.
Yes, and that's another part of it. I was very excited about Bernie, and we were talking about comfortability, and I think that's so essential to get people who are comfortable knocking on doors. The other component of that, I think, is finding a candidate that really resonates and really speaks to the people. And that's when you talk about that relatability. And when somebody gets in there that that is exciting and people can get behind, then you're going to see a lot more people being active. We had our first meetings in the living room of my house. So, and it was just people in the neighborhood getting together and talking about how we're going to do this and how we're going to run this thing. And it was a very grassroots effort. And that was pretty exciting.
Okay, Amanda, thank you for sharing your experience as a volunteer from a past caucus season in Clay County. Amanda, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we want to talk, Rachel, we want to have a Democratic and a Republican organizer join us in a moment. And I want to say, Rachel, with your expertise, if you'd be shoulder to shoulder with me as we kind of explore, reach out and ask questions of these people, too, is what I'm saying, as we explore what it means to be an organizer. Let's talk with Penny Ross Ford, Iowa Democratic Party District 4 Chair, joining us by phone. Penny, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome to
how
the
are
program.
You?
We're doing fine. Trying to understand how the caucuses work at this level. I understand you are a volunteer during the day. You work for Mercy One. You're a medical secretary. That's a full-time job.
Yep.
So what we're talking about here is your volunteer work. What is your current role here in this election cycle?
Well, my role this year is to try to get everybody in my district, the 4th district, ready for caucus. And that's a big lift this year. We have lots of changes coming up. One of the things that we did early on this year in 2019 was we started having caucus check-in calls to kind of build up so that we could get our locations locked in and start to build a volunteer pool that will ultimately be the folks on the ground running the caucuses.
You have these calls. Calls with who at this point? With whom?
This would be district committee members and also interested parties, potential volunteers throughout the 4th district.
Mm-hmm. And at this stage, what are your biggest challenges?
Right now, we are almost to goal as far as locations. We're well on our way. I think we're in probably the 40-50% margin for volunteers, and that means that we have some things already set up. For example, a temporary chair and a temporary secretary, a couple people to, like, take charge initially. Mm-hmm. And then right now, this Saturday, we are going to have our first formal training for the caucuses.
Okay, for actual caucus day?
No, this is August 3rd. This is Saturday. And we're going to have a training for anybody in the 4th District. And actually, anybody all over Iowa can, you know, register Democrat that wants to be involved in the caucuses could come Saturday to Fort Dodge and take this training. We're kind of titling this as a train the trainer type of thing. And so they will come, this group will come and get trained. And then our hope is that they go back and they can help folks in their own county. Obviously, we're having many more trainings, but it's good to have folks that are already trained and ready to go because there are, as you know, a lot of precincts in Iowa.
Right.
So Penny, this is a really important step.
Rachel, jump in here. I think you want
to. Yeah, I am. I'm going to. you know, we spent the first part of the program really talking about how campaigns use volunteers. And I think what's interesting about this is a lot of people forget that the Iowa caucuses are entirely party run. They're not run by the government in any way. And so what the parties have to do, the just the logistical challenge of organizing these caucuses. So when you talk about training the trainers and when you talk about, you know, finding a temporary chair, what is it that those people are ultimately asked to do?
Well, a temporary chair, when you are going to be expected to run your precinct caucus. So this might be somebody that has been involved at your county level, maybe sits on your county committee, and they're able to take their precinct, their neighborhood precinct, and be in charge. Typically, on the temporary chair and temporary secretaries, you have to have somebody to record everything. These people, it's just a matter of, you know, voting them in. It's somebody to basically take charge is what that amounts to. And then the caucuses, of course, are already set up. They have an agenda and they go through the agenda. But it's basically, okay, it's time to start. You know, this is what we're going to do. This is the next thing. Kind of walking them through it. So it does take some training. And in the past, of course, there haven't been as many changes. The changes have been subtle over the years. This year, there's bigger changes, which will take some more training. But I'm always amazed at the Iowa caucuses. This is entirely volunteer run. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. It takes a ton of people. The campaigns are helpful in that they do have people that sometimes wear two hats. Maybe they have somebody in a precinct where they could be helpful checking people in, because there's several different jobs just to get this going. You have people to kind of wayfind and precinct caucus finder type people. Sometimes people are unsure of their precinct before they go. And so, you know, you always want to have somebody available to do that and somebody to check the people in. And then once they get, you know, settled down, you know, into their room, then, of course, just having, you know, help to, you know, kind of move the caucus along. Maybe it's, you know, I don't know, maybe handing out paperwork. A lot of times in our county, we maybe have an upcoming meeting after the caucuses, like a week later, to start in on our county convention. That might be something that, you know, a volunteer could help the caucus leader do.
Mm-hmm. We get the sense here, Penny, and just to make sure you clear up any perhaps misconceptions here, at your level as a volunteer, as the Iowa Democratic Party District 4 chair, you are neutral when it comes to backing any Democratic candidates. Are you neutral throughout? Will you eventually be behind a candidate or a nominee?
Yes, I honestly, I think everyone in these roles in leadership really tries to stay neutral for as long as they can. But, you know, I think that it's okay if people decide to jump in and support a candidate. For me personally, I really love the caucuses and being a part of a team and helping to back your candidate. So that's kind of my opinion.
Right.
I know that a lot of the county chairs, you know, are going to remain neutral. I can't say for myself at this point.
Mm-hmm. Rachel.
Yeah. One of the, you know, in this effort, I think in terms of, as you suggest, a lot of the people who will be volunteering will also be supporting a candidate. I think one of the most remarkable things that people from outside Iowa maybe don't understand is the degree to which this very informal process, right? I mean, it's entirely run by volunteers.
Yeah.
This very informal process, somehow or another, I mean, we have no evidence that it's ever been opened up to any sort of systematic manipulation or bias. Mm-hmm. How do we explain that? I mean, it seems like it'd be pretty easy for somebody to manipulate this process, and yet somehow or another they don't.
Yeah, I really think that, you know, people here, I don't know that it's just Iowa, but I would like to think it's Iowa nice that people are that way. But when people go to the caucus, I mean, granted, you know, if they're coming in as a caucus goer, sure, they want to come and support their, you know, person, but they also know there's a job that needs to be done. It's a little overwhelming if you come in just as a caucus goer and you walk in and you see neighbors and friends volunteering and you realize that it's all put on by volunteers. Mm. So I think that has something to do with it too, you know, because it's at the precinct level. You're more likely to know folks that are doing it. So if you're a caucus goer, I can totally see that. And as far as the rest, honestly, I think people want to be a part of the process. For the county parties, this is also a party-building effort. And really, realistically, this was never supposed to be just about the presidential campaigns or the presidential hopefuls. This was a party-building process. Okay. And so, you know, we love it. We love having the presidential candidates come through, and we love doing the caucuses. But realistically, this is our way to build up our volunteer or activist bench, is by having these caucuses.
Okay, Penny Roseford, we have to go now. We want to get to one more guest. Iowa Democratic Party District 4 Chair, a volunteer position, covering, of course, the northwest and central part of the state, the 4th District. Penny, thank you for giving us sort of an inside view of what you're doing to make the Iowa caucuses work.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Penny. Have a good 6 months.
Busy Bye-bye. 6 months for sure.
That's right.
Joining me and Rachel now, Gloria Mazza is president of the Iowa Federation of Republican Women, former executive director of the Polk County Republicans. Gloria, are you there?
I am.
This is a very different year than we had in 2016 with the, well, great number of Republican candidates. What does this season look like for you in your role with Donald Trump, the inevitable Republican nominee?
It's pretty calm right now, compared to especially where it was in 2016. Basically, the Republican Party has thrown their support with Trump for the Iowa caucuses with his, you know, resounding victory of 10 points in November 2016 election. So our main focus is going to be to build the grassroots out from this, a lot like your caller before. At the county levels, they'll start getting the delegates that will go on to the county convention, to the district, onto the state convention, to pick delegates in that go to the national. But it also is very important to build in the gal. I'm sorry, I can't remember her name that was just with you.
Penny Roseford.
Yeah, Penny. You know, we talked about the locals, the county central committees. This is when we get the engagement, then that we'll be involved when it comes to once both parties have a candidate and we're on the, you know, on the ground. So we have a little bit of time to be putting things together. The counties are now putting together their locations just like the Democrats are. It doesn't feel the pressure. The pressure is not here when it's kind of your off year.
Right. When it's already decided. Talk
working
about
with campaigns like they are. They're really pushing out people when there's so many campaigns, they're really pushing the people to get involved because they need them as delegates down the line too, if, you know, for right. for the national, possibly, if a party doesn't have their candidate by then.
Right. Gloria, talk about this level, how you work with the Democratic Party as a president of the Iowa Federation of Republican Women. Of course, all our media, news media, reporting on the increasing hyper-partisanship. What does it look like in your relationship in organizing the caucuses? You have to work with the Democrats. What is that relationship like?
Well, back in 2016, and I actually was the executive director of the Polk County Republicans, and my counterpart for the Democrats here in Polk County, we were sisters from the other party. That's how we referred to each other. We worked very close because when you have to have 177 precincts, a lot of our lower counties don't have that many. You have to work together because churches and locations are bipartisan. If they're going to have one of the parties there, they got to have room for the other. So we met many times to go over the locations and where we could both fit because each of us have different needs for how we run our caucuses. They may need a gym where we need more of an auditorium because we do a secret ballot and their process is different. So, yes, it was very much working together. We advertised, the two parties advertised the locations together. We split the cost. So, you know, there's a lot of bipartisan that we liked working together, actually.
Mm-hmm. Rachel, did you want to jump in here?
Well, I mean, 2016 for both parties saw this new reporting system that went into place that put a lot of extra pressure on both parties in terms of volunteers and getting that set up ahead of time, but then perhaps alleviated some of the pressure on caucus night itself in terms of the reporting structure. So do you expect that there will be a lot of people watching what the Democrats are doing this year and the changes that they've made to the process? Like, how much do you learn from each other in terms of kind of how you can alleviate some of the immediate needs of caucus night and that volunteer labor force?
Yeah, that we do our votes so differently. Ours are done secret ballot, and the state party invested quite a bit, and we had recording devices. So besides a chair and a secretary, we also were training recorders who reported our results immediately that night, and it was perfect. It came that was all over the state. And now I know they do theirs differently. I've been into mock caucus trainings with the Democrat executive director. We used to do those together, so I do know it's different, but I would be wrong in, you know, even talking about it because I don't know what happened. I know there was flips of coins and that's about it.
Right.
But so I was so involved with what was happening when we had 13 candidates and the, you know, all the campaigns. And then once a caucus is over, the amount of work, and especially for a county like Polk, is extreme and people don't even realize that. And one thing, what happens that I see happens in my involvement with campaigns and caucuses is if you don't, most people think caucuses are just a vote for the presidential candidate, which is true. But we have caucus even in midterms. And I would, you know, the turnout isn't like a primary or an election. It's even a fourth of that when it comes to midterms. And then you add a snowstorm, you know, you may not have very many people at a caucus. But again, it's as crucial every 2 years to build the county parties from caucus. And other states don't do that like Iowa does.
Mm-hmm. Gloria, we have just a minute left. I wonder, with your experience, if you could change one thing about the process, what would it be? What's your biggest worry? Where would you like a change?
About 60 degrees on February 3rd.
Okay, I wonder how that's... Well, global climate change may take
care
of that. If I
could change it, I would try to get everybody excited to really get the caucus experience, but I'm not sure how we can change that without just talking it up all the time, and that's what we try to do.
Yeah.
People are missing out if they're not involved.
Okay, Gloria, how can people get involved?
By stepping forward, just like I did. I wasn't involved until 2012, and I've
kind of come a long ways with my involvement since, just because, and mine wasn't a candidate I got involved, but mine was a policy. Everybody gets involved for a different reason. Right. It will excite them for some reason. Something just has to kind of light that spark, and sometimes it's just walking in caucus night, and people are, it's different, and they're okay. Not, you know, they're worried about what's going to happen there. It's not like going in and filling out the ballot.
Gloria Mazza, we hear your passion, president of the Iowa Federation of Republican Women. Thank you very much, Gloria, for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
And Rachel Caulfield, thank you for jumping in with your expertise and your questions as well. We appreciate it. We'll catch you next another Politics Day.
Thanks for letting me stick around.
Oh, for sure. River to River is produced by Caitlin Harrop, Rip Brewer, and Shirley Wong. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow on the program, it's a News Buzz edition. Hope you'll join us for that. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.